Hey, Tab Potters, we're back with another That's a Dive. Sitting here in the studio with my man, PJ, and we're watching the end of Manchester City Lyon Champions League. And it's getting kind of crazier. Injury time, Sergio Aguero just missed one over the top. Looked like he was going to pull off one of his weaving runs to level things. Pep watching from the stands with his Peaky Blinders hat. And it looks like it's going to be a pretty bad start to the Champions League campaign here for Manchester City, PJ.
Yeah, we thought this was going to be an easy one at home to Lyon, but just shows you there's no easy games in the Champions League, I guess.
All right, a little short corner here. We're doing radio. We're doing live call radio.
Do we have the rights for this? Do we know, by the way?
Are we allowed to do this? Is this legal? By the way, Sané's come on in this game.
Oh, there's that Peaky Blinders
absolutely hat. Lit it up. He's been just taking lives out there. Cutting people, incredible, dicey runs. And he just had a volley that he shanked a little bit. But he's changed the game since coming on. I think Manchester City equalizing this game. I mean, Lyon's been catching them on the break. Memphis Depay has looked dangerous. We were watching Manchester United on the other screen in the studio. They got young boys. They're in Switzerland, right? Yeah, so it's on the road and
still up 3-0.
Yeah, they're just steamrolling them.
Martial
looks
right?
Good. Yeah, Martial, you know, kind of like Sané, you know, young, talented. Body language not the best, it seems that Sané's international teammates are saying. But both of them, 1v1, just a joy to watch. So Manchester United looking really good at the beginning of their Champions League campaign, and Manchester City not so much.
By the way, Manchester United fans probably won't like it that we're not really planning on talking about them because they're actually playing well.
Because they've been good.
Playing well lately.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get to them, you know, if they keep it up, we'll get back to them, but...
Well, yeah, what Manchester United fans are going to say is, of course, when they start performing
exactly.
Well, they escape they disappear from the format for That's a Dive. But I'm ready to give some mini love right now for a good going into the international break. Could have been slippery and not the best performance, but at least got a good performance to quiet things down in the international break. And only thing people were talking about is Jose Mourinho tripping over the velvet rope. And now out of the international break, two good performances. So turning things around, and City are about to get caught on the counter again. Ooh, I mean, Lyon, I can't believe Lyon's pouring this.
Do you think him being up in the stands has made a huge difference?
I think so, because Arteta is the one standing in the technical area. It just won't have the effect that it has when Pep stands out there. But so, also, Pep gives, like, live-time instructions, and mm-hmm. part of his ban is he's not allowed to give any instructions at all. So he's probably seeing things up there thinking, like, I can't believe no one's saying this, but no one is saying it.
So this doesn't look good for Arteta's resume as a manager when he applies for the Arsenal job again. Does that sound right?
Di Matteo won it and lost his job, so I guess Champions League doesn't really matter for those that come next. But Lyon, I mean, what a massive 3 points this would be for them. Who's in the group again? It's City.
Check.
It's one of the easier groups, so even if City lose this first game, ooh, good opportunity there. Mahrez has come off the bench, so he and Sané have come on to really torment some tired Lyon players. In the outside back positions. Here's a corner kick. Mahrez bending it in, under hit. It's got to be better at this point in the game. And that's it. Manchester City lose at home against Lyon to start their Champions League campaign. Who's in the group?
So they're Group F with Hoffenheim and Shakhtar.
Yeah,
as well,
I mean, this will obviously be a negative and will put a lot of focus on their next game in the Premier League, but I mean, they got to really, really mess it up to not get through that group.
Yeah, they still have 5 games left. Some other interesting notes: Real Madrid, easy win today against Roma, 3-0 in Rome.
And a Cristiano Ronaldo red card.
And then
card.
Ronaldo got a red card, but Juventus.
So I wasn't watching that. Was it a VAR red card? Because
I didn't see it, to be honest. So
VAR is in Champions League this year, isn't it? Or am I confusing that with?
I don't know 100%. I know it's in Serie A because they just had the incident. I don't know if you saw the incident with Douglas Costa this past weekend.
Yeah,
that was reviewed by VAR.
I can't remember. Look it up. I mean, that's what the World Wide Web is for. Before we get the answer to is VAR in the Champions League, let's get to the reviews. So again, keep with the reviews coming. And then what we want you to do now, review the show and give me the stadium in the world that you have never been to that you want to go to watch a soccer match. And we're going back to the vault. We got a really good review from Martin Gravely, and he mentioned a team we hadn't heard of. Mm-hmm. And we asked him, if you're listening, please tell us what's behind it. And he answered our prayers. So he said this. When I was a kid, I watched the Fox Soccer Channel, and every Friday at 5, I hope you didn't watch Soccer Talk Live, because I hosted that, and it was not a very good show. Every Friday at 5, and the J-League highlight show came on, and I saw Rawa Reds fans. So I saw and this was the team we weren't sure of in the mm-hmm. J-League. I was captivated by their chants, the flags, the banners, and their team scored a lot. I hadn't been exposed to Manchester United, and FC Cincinnati was nowhere near existing, so I supported the Urawa Reds through the weekly highlight show. Now I follow them on Instagram and watch some crap streams on mornings when, which is illegal, I wake up in time. Hope that answers the question y'all had. It does answer the question. What a cool story that, you know, you found a team. Obviously, you know, J-League, a big known league, but not a lot of people, for obvious reasons, can watch that and fall in love. So, cool story. Yeah. Do they have VAR in the Champions League this season?
They do not. It'll start next season.
Next season.
So
that was
the
announcement.
Yeah. They will do it next season.
All right. Yep. So they saw Cristiano Ronaldo and whatever he did. I didn't see what he did.
Rough start for him. He finally got his first two goals at Juventus this past weekend, but now a red card in Champions League. Especially after Messi just got a hat trick the day before. So not to throw that in.
But. Uh-oh. I hope you're not listening, Cristiano. We still love you. All right, let's get into the topics for the show this week. We're going to stick with some Champions League talk. Ed Nazard, is he the best in Europe? And Champions League is one of the places that you prove that. Talking of Cristiano Ronaldo, one of the strongest arguments he has for being the best in the world for people who believe that, and Cristiano does, is his performance, which is incredible in Champions League historically. And Sarri recently has talked about Eden Hazard, and we'll get into that when we get to that topic. We're going to talk Spurs, league, Champions League, just can't stop losing. What's going on with Pochettino's men? But let's start with Liverpool, who can't stop winning. And I'm going to say it every week just because I'm insecure and I want to feel good about myself. I said it was going to be a really special season for Liverpool. I've gone out on a limb and said they're going to win the Premier League. I think with the way that Manchester City have started, just lost their first game of the Champions League, it doesn't look so ridiculous, but obviously early doors. And I just think this Liverpool side, just like Klopp's Borussia Dortmund side, it's coming along, it's growing. He's using a lot of the same mechanisms, a lot of the same formula that he did at Borussia Dortmund. And I just see a team that is irresistible as they were last year, but more balanced in the midfield, better defensive unit. I think Wijnaldum has really been able to recently shine in that deeper defensive midfield position. I remember last season he was tried there a couple times and did a good enough job, but you know, he's played if in a deeper midfield position next to someone, not really as a holder historically in his career. So now having that option, And the mobility that gives them when he plays together with, if it's Naby Keita or Milner recently, who, by the way, holy cow, I mean, yeah. Milner just defying all laws of when your career is supposed to dip.
Yep.
Playing left back when he first gets to Liverpool tremendously. Now in the midfield, covering more ground than anyone. I see a team now with Mane back firing that's able to overcome one worrying thing. And the worrying thing is Mo Salah is just, you know, he meteoric and just mythical season last year. Mm-hmm. Just went from being an incredibly talented player who came to the Premier League and you would say failed, might be harsh, but then goes, yeah, regroups in Italy, comes back. No one expected him to have the season he had last year. And because of that, expectations are off the charts. And he's not meeting expectations so far. All the way to, there was a moment during the broadcast where Jurgen Klopp, it seemed like he said, pass the ball. There was a moment where Mo Salah had dribbled a few players and goes to try to curl in a very difficult effort from a tough angle when he had Sadio Mane open, and the camera cuts to Jurgen Klopp, who screams at Salah past the ball.
You're talking about the PSG or Tottenham?
The PSG game, okay. I believe. Mm-hmm. Was that in the PSG? No.
It could have been either one, to be honest, because he had chances in both games. But.
And so, you know, the good thing about Liverpool is they keep winning games and not putting together full performances. Mm-hmm. And many teams early on in this Premier League season aren't really at their best yet. There are some that are closer than others. But Liverpool, just have that sort of feeling. I was listening to the two Robbies, and I think Musto was saying there's just a feeling about it. And we get this feeling early on in seasons. And I think he referenced Chelsea when Mourinho came back first time, and then Manchester City last year. There are these seasons where a team gets this momentum early on, mm-hmm. and it just feels like, okay, this is a force, and Liverpool feel like that right now.
Yeah, and I think for Salah's case, you know, it's still early. So even though he struggled and hasn't gone off to the right start, you know, it's still plenty of time to recover.
Sure.
And you mentioned Mane firing, and you've also got Firmino, who came with a big goal for them yesterday against PSG.
One-eye Bobby,
exactly. You know, and Sturridge getting goals too, by the way. He got the first goal. They have plenty of options who can you know, carry the load if Salah goes into a bit of a rut,
yeah.
and starts to struggle. So I think I think you don't have to worry about him too much if you're a Liverpool fan, right? The only thing that was interesting is he took him off yesterday in the PSG game, which, and I don't know if that's because he was at fault on the second goal where he gave the ball away.
Well, he was,
So, but it's just interesting. You think you'd keep Salah if you're trying to, if you're tied 2-2, you want to get the winner, you'd keep Salah in there. So it's just an interesting move. Maybe Klopp knows he's struggling. He's trying to, you know, send a message to him or something, but...
And who was it? Shaqiri that came on for him?
Shaqiri came in for him.
Yeah, I mean, here's the other thing is, you know, you want to reward Shaqiri. I feel like mm-hmm. he's come off the bench several times, and I said in preseason, I was worried about this move because this isn't the type of player that is okay being a reserve, being someone off the bench, but he has been. He's come on and brought energy. He's brought work. He's been able to bring work rate. And so you need to keep him. Once you have depth, you have to make sure you balance it. But I also think it was a bit of a statement to Salah to say, it doesn't matter what you did last season. Mm-hmm. You know, you made a big mistake. It could have cost us this game. And you haven't been as dominant and as irresistible in the attacking third. So I'm going to give a guy an option off the bench. And then they win that game, right? And someone had I saw on Twitter or somewhere, there was an image of Klopp celebrating and Salah like slamming his bottle when they scored. Now, the context of that, we have no idea. But, you know,
it could have been a happy body slam.
Yeah, exactly. The narrative someone was trying to push is like he's being selfish. And I agree with you. This is no big deal. Salah's not really going to make a big deal about being substituted. I like that Klopp did it. And here's the other thing, to your point. People forget he struggled at the beginning of last season. I mean, I remember right at the beginning of the season, he missed so many chances. I mean, he was the first few games of the season just as profligate as you can get and wasteful in a way that was not consistent with his talent. And then finally, when he started hitting his stride, he just wouldn't stop scoring. So I wouldn't worry.
Well, I was saying, I think that's been an issue with him his entire career. I remember watching some Roma games, one specifically against Manchester United, where they should have knocked Manchester United out a couple years ago, and he just missed a ton of chances. And you can look at that as a positive, too, that he's always getting into those spaces and in those creating those opportunities, and he's going to miss some, but you know, if he ends up scoring 30, 40 goals like he did last year, then you're going to be okay.
And we forget, too, I had a bad shoulder injury in college, and I'm not going to tell the story of how I did it, because it was off the clock and maybe a little bit too early in the morning. And, you know, you shouldn't be playing tackle football in a parking lot when you're a college soccer player. So it took me a while to get comfortable in my stride again. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. I mean, we're still not all that far off from him struggling to come back from a bad shoulder injury.
And he was under a lot of pressure to kind of rush back from that injury with the World Cup and represent Egypt and everything. So, you know, it's still recovering.
The other thing I've noticed is Alisson's not messing around anymore.
Yeah.
There's been a few times he's absolutely booted the ball up the field.
Yeah.
So that message got across. Everyone was wondering if he was gonna get it. Yeah. He got it, for sure.
By the way, it was the biggest story from this game that you mentioned Shaqiri coming in.
From
also,
the PSG game?
But also, Choupo-Moting came in for PSG.
Oh, yeah.
The Stoke revival happened in the Champions League for Liverpool PSG.
So funny when that happens, when like you lose track of a player and they just pop up.
Well, you go from a team that just was relegated, and he wasn't even a regular starter on Stoke all the time, and now he's coming into the Champions League for PSG, and he actually helped set up the second goal, I think.
Right? Well, and like a different version of that, but I remember when like I was like, oh my god, yeah, Alex Song's playing for Barcelona, and you know, it's like. That wasn't as much a disparity and ridiculous, but you know, it's so funny when these players just you lose track of them and they pop up with these big clubs. And PSG, Neymar, it's going to be a worry because what they had to spend to get him, they just can't strengthen in areas that they need to make them a force in the Champions League. And early on in that game. I mean, Anfield's just so special, isn't it? And early on in that game, Milner on the sideline just dropped Neymar right into the technical area, and like Klopp almost stepped over him. And that was kind of a like, you know, he, this is Anfield, this is what's up. And it was a blow to PSG, who relies so heavily on Neymar, who was brilliant in parts of that game for sure, especially in the first half.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, they have a player like Marquinhos, I believe, is playing midfield, right? And he's a center back, so. Yeah. Like you said, they're not as strong in other areas, and it makes me wonder: is Liverpool right now a more complete team than PSG? Are they actually a better?
So.
I mean, is this result really not that surprising? Like everyone thinks, oh, PSG, the money they spend, they should win this game automatically, or they should dominate. But I think Liverpool might just actually be the better team.
There was a stretch during that game where Liverpool were absolutely running over PSG, and PSG had no answer for it. So. If Liverpool were a bit more clinical, that game would have been well out of reach by the time PSG mounted a comeback.
We got another about 45 seconds or a minute on this. I want to go back to Liverpool's midfield.
Yeah.
You know, we've kind of brought this up on some of our calls with the Robbies and Lee and Graham and all these guys. But what do you think of is their best midfield? And you brought up Wijnaldum and how great he's been. And I wonder, you know, he almost was forgotten when they signed Keita and also Fabinho, who finally got in at the end of that game. You know, they look like, oh, it's going to be Keita, Fabinho, and Henderson. That's the midfield. Milner and Wijnaldum around the outside looking in. But Wijnaldum, like you said, has been one of the regulars. And I just wonder, and Milner too, these two players have earned
their time. They're undroppable right now.
And it's just kind of funny to think about that. So is that a concern at all that they have kind of that he's going to be maybe shuffling the midfield around, or does he have the right trio, or do you have a preferred trio? I guess
I have a preferred trio, but I have no problem him shuffling it around a bit. And here's the thing: he's going to have to naturally because Henderson still is struggling with a chronic heel. I mean, you set me up to get crushed by the whistle. He's struggling with a chronic heel injury that he's rotated regardless of his form.
Yeah.
I think Henderson is not the first choice anymore. Like, I honestly think at this point, if you're saying all healthy, all equal, Wijnaldum starts in that deep role because I just think it makes them with Keita and then Milner, who covers a lot of ground but still isn't really covering a lot of ground in a way that you can play another midfielder that's a workhorse but not really quick and mobile in terms of if you get out of shape. You know, Milner's great and Henderson great at making up for a lack of speed through speed of thought and being in right positions. But when you have Keita, when you have Wijnaldum, you can actually let Wijnaldum join the attack more than Milner will, because you know between the two of them, one of them's going to be able to get back to cover that space. You know, it's also interesting too because Lallana gets healthy at some point. So as Lallana kind of comes back into the picture, you know, that becomes another midfield option. I really don't see Lallana getting back into the side in a wide position. Even though he's used there, I think it changes them. And that's where they really need speed.
Yeah.
Because when they have speed high in those inverted channels with Firmino tucking in, that's what keeps a back line really honest. So you have to play Salah and Mane if they're fit.
Mm-hmm.
And Sturridge is making an argument for coming in that central role. So this, all that depth is great. I mean, I think Klopp is doing, he's doing the right thing by giving guys opportunities, by taking guys out at the right moments. Yeah. So I'm still feeling really good about Liverpool.
Let's be honest, though, Lallana's a League Cup player this season. That's probably where he's going to make
just,
his money.
Yeah, I mean, the muscle injuries. I mean, listen, his best when he was fit, which has been a long time, I think he can he would begin to replace what they lost with Coutinho. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, Coutinho leaving showed Liverpool that they can be different.
Yep.
You know, they can press and they can really get on top of teams. And Coutinho slows it down at times in a way that was really good and beneficial. But they're just kind of a different unit now. Yeah. Let's move on to another team that I was optimistic about before the season, and that's slowly, I'm still there, but it's slowly being questioned.
It's being tested.
Spurs. It's not that they're losing games, and so the 2-1 loss at Wembley to Liverpool, with how good Liverpool are, there's not a ton that's worrying in that. And then go to the Inter Milan loss. Listen, for parts of that game, they were excellent. You know, just a real lack of discipline to give up those goals late and not shut it down, which was their Champions League campaign last season. But here are the things really worrying me about Spurs. Just a lack of energy. You know, I mean, yeah, there were World Cups for all these teams, and all of these teams have started a bit slow, but I've seen a sluggish Spurs recently, and that's concerning because their entire philosophy and what they're good at is predicated on high energy, and without it, they just don't look a dangerous side. They look a side that you can kind of get through and you can deal with. The other thing that really concerns me is Pochettino's made some tactical decisions recently that I've thought, like, what is he doing? Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I've really questioned Pochettino. And one example, and I could give a few, is Dembele, as much as I love him. And the guy's a Rolls Royce, man. He's been one of the most enjoyable players to watch in the Premier League over the past. I mean, even going back to the Fulham days where he was a more advanced player and kind of a playmaker, he just doesn't have the legs anymore to be able to be your holding midfielder. And in a diamond, where then you move Eric Dier into a more advanced role, and he's not really going to be a creative influence. I mean, that's kind of a role swap that makes no sense. And before the game even started, I tweeted out, you know, just not advisable to play Dembele. It was what against Watford, I remember he did it, and then this game, and I just thought, you can't get away with it, and he didn't. And also Dembele, here's what he never does, which he's been doing a bit recently, is give the ball away. Yeah. I mean, the benefit of having him in that deep role, yeah, you think he can help you build out of the back. He can beat people off the dribble. He's calm on the ball. He's composed. He can play between the lines. But he started giving the ball away cheaply. And when Dyer's advanced and ahead of him, you're really going to put a lot of pressure on that back unit.
Yeah, and it's not just the midfield. I think defensively, too. I mean, he brought Alderweireld back in, and he's back as part of the team, and so is Danny Rose. But, you know, you just don't know, is he going to play a back three? Now that he's got Vertonghen, Sanchez, and Alderweireld, he could do that. You know, for the Champions League game, he left Trippier back in England, I think, along with Alderweireld. And, you know, then he has Davies. He started Rose against Liverpool. He started Davies against Inter, Rose against Liverpool. You know, obviously you're going to have to rotate. You want to rotate. You have depth. But you look at Liverpool, they started the same back four in both those games, in their Champions League and the game against Spurs. They basically started the top three. The main reason they started Sturridge, I think, was because Firmino, you know, one-eyed Bobby was still recovering from that injury, and then they shuffled the midfield a little bit. So, you know, I think with Liverpool, you know what their best 11 is, or pretty close to it. Like we said, you could debate the midfield.
Yeah.
Spurs, you I don't think we have any idea what their best 11 is, and I don't know if Pochettino, we don't know what their best system is. And he keeps changing it all the time. It makes you wonder if he really knows, and he's starting to experiment. I think Lucas Moura was also left off, by the way, in the Champions League. He's been arguably their best player.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of questions about a lot of players right now, last few games.
And I said this, I think it was on the last pod. It was recently. You can't expect Harry Kane to maintain the levels that he has maintained over the past few seasons. And by that, I mean the production levels. I mean, of course, he's still going to be a very dangerous, talented, good goal scorer. And most likely your leading goal scorer. But, I mean, it's just unprecedented that someone would continue to lead the scoring in a league full of amazing strikers. Yeah. I mean, to continue to beat Sergio Aguero, who's a better finisher than Harry Kane? I mean, a very good debate, and it's a close debate, but I do think he's a better finisher than Harry Kane. I mean, that's amazing. So there was going to be this drop in production. And the hope is that Lucas Moura in this more advanced role can help out with that. Early on, he has. But what's troubling with Harry Kane is he didn't have the best World Cup. You know, people kind of forget that. Like,
they think he scored six goals.
Scoring from the penalty spot, listen, is not easy. But a pub player can score a penalty on a world-class goalkeeper, but not even get a sniff in the box in the run of play against world-class defenders and beat a world-class goalkeeper, right? So, like, it takes a lot more to be a talented world-class goal scorer in the run of play than it does from the penalty spot. Not to diminish it, but it was more his entire body of work during the World Cup told me one thing. It was something that we saw at the end of the Premier League campaign. I'm not sure he got over that ankle injury. And that's a few times now where he's had ankle ligament injuries. And I remember being in the studio and we got handed the team sheet. And I thought, how the hell is Harry Kane not only back already, but he's starting in this game? And I'll tell you, as someone who suffered a ton of injuries, ligaments don't heal. What they do is they try to get the swelling down, which is actually kind of the reverse of what your body needs, but it's how you get back on the field right away. So they get the swelling down, they tape it, you know, injections, all these other things that get you back on the field quickly. Yeah. But your ligament is still left damaged. And if you do that too many times, you kind of, I mean, in a way, it's what Jack Wilshere is going through right now, and it's probably going to end his career. You only have so many of those tape it up and move on situations when it comes, especially to ankle ligaments, and that's your foundation. That's your contact with the ground. And Harry Kane, as hard as he hits a ball, locking his ankles, you know, as much as he gets hit around the box, he just doesn't really look like he's got the stride and the explosion and just the stability that he had before his last ankle injury.
There was a clear play in the Inter game where somebody put a ball over the top and he brought it down beautifully with the first touch, and then he went around the keeper and all he had to do was basically pass it in with his left foot, but you could tell he just didn't get there as quick as he normally would, and he ended up trying to take an extra touch and he ended up kicking it out for a goal kick, I think. So just those little plays like that where something looks, you know, just something looks off, like you've mentioned. By the way, World Cup again, two goals came against Tunisia, and the hat trick came against Panama. So five of his six goals were against Tunisia and Panama.
Well, and one of them he knew nothing about.
One of them deflected off,
shot off of him. This isn't a Harry Kane bashing session. I have actually been the one in the studio saying he is world class, and trying to make that argument. I it's concerning that you're not really seeing him kind of at top form, at top sharpness.
Do you think? I mean, if he is injured, or whether he's injured or not, the other talk has just been that he's tired. Their upcoming schedule, at least Premier League, they've got Brighton, Huddersfield, Cardiff, West Ham. I mean, should he consider resting in some of those games? I mean, the big game is Man City October 29th, so that's over a month away.
I mean, I don't think you can afford to rest him in this next one. I mean, I think they need a good performance, and they need to rebound quickly, but of course there are games in there in preparation for that one that they should rest him. But he never does.
Yeah,
he almost never rests Harry Kane. In the past, it was because there was no other option, really.
But that's why I wonder if that's something they need to change. And again, they don't have the option. I mean, they have Llorente. It's a bit of a drop.
I mean, Son can be used up there, and that would be interesting to see Son Moura. You know, he can switch obviously to more of a top three. You know, and use wingers. I mean, there are a lot of options. It'll be really interesting to see how does Pochettino arrest this mini slide, and tactically, what does he do to fix things? Because we've seen some cracks. We've seen some early cracks.
What would you have him do in midfield? You talked about the players that have struggled, like Dembele and Dier being out of position. How do you think he can change that?
I mean, I think if he's gonna play. If he's going to play a back three, he can afford to play one holder. And if he's going to play a back four and let his fullbacks get forward, which he does out of a back four, I think he's going to need two holders. I mean, you know, Wanyama and Dier have done that in the past.
I was going to say, those are probably the two that he should go with, you would think, right?
Yeah, I mean, Wanyama, he looks also not entirely back from injury. There were a couple moments where he didn't really look explosive and sure of his footing. The tough part about tactical decisions is there's a lot of information we don't have. You know, a lot of times we sit in here, like Torreira with Arsenal. Still every game I'm sitting here thinking, why on earth has Emery not started this guy? He brings him into every single game, every single time he makes Arsenal better. But again, like, you know, maybe there's just one piece of information carrying an injury or training bad or whatever it is. You know, there's a lot going on with Spurs we don't know about. But you know, that leaves us with a lot of questions. And I think their performances recently have given us more questions than answers. Eden Hazard.
Yep.
So,
we have talked about in the past, by the way.
Yeah, a lot. Yep. I mean, he's enigmatic. He is incredibly talented. And he sits in this, you know, this zone, this debatable zone of world-class or not, right? The eye test tells you for sure this is a world-class player.
Yep.
I mean, within 5 minutes of watching a game, you see him and you say, that's the best guy in the field, this is a world-class player. We've always kind of sat here and said, I mean, is it a lack of killer instinct? And is it a lack of taking over games and bearing chances and taking that incredible talent and ability and transforming it into talismanic game-changing ability, right? So I think he's been doing that recently more than he's done that in the past. And his new coach, it hasn't taken a long time. And remember, this started with Sarri coming in, and there being a little bit of controversy because Eden Hazard supposedly wanted to leave, and Sarri hadn't met with him yet. He's back late from the World Cup. So this is a relationship that's kind of still in progress, but this is what Sarri had to say about Eden Hazard.
I thought that he was really one of the best in Europe, but now I am changing my mind because maybe he is the best in Europe.
And after that, he said he thinks he can go on and score 40 goals this season.
Wow. So, and think about the guys that guy's coached, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he's seen some of the best in Europe, and I don't think that's hyperbolic, right? I think the frustration with Eden Hazard
is the best in Europe is hyperbolic. Probably.
Well, I mean, take Messi. Like, we have to stop including Messi.
But they're in Europe.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, as long as Messi exists, there's no fun. Yeah. There's no fun conversation because okay. Nothing's like him.
Yeah,
and nothing will ever be like him. I mean, he's an alien. So every time I think about this, I just discount him and say nothing compares.
Ronaldo too.
I mean, no. I mean, Ronaldo is the best of the rest. Mm-hmm. For sure. And Messi's like, you know, I feel like if we had Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You, we'd play it right now. But like nothing compares to Messi. And Eden Hazard is just, he's in that next tier of, you just see it's special. Mm-hmm. You see it's there's a gift combined with an incredible understanding, combined with a remarkable athletic ability. It's just all there. And I had lunch with Thierry Henry in the city. Let me just pick that name up real quick. dropped it right here on the studio floor. And he said something that I mean, he knows better than most because he spent the entire World Cup with them, yep. with the Belgian national team. And Thierry Henry has played with some of the best players in the world, including Messi.
Including himself, one of the best players
in the world. Yeah, exactly. he said he thought he was the player of the World Cup. And it's funny, like, I didn't really consider that. But like once you kind of break it down, I mean, Modric for me was deserving, mm-hmm. but Rakitic had a lot to do with that. So put Modric next to someone else, yep. he's still good. He still stands out. I don't know if he has the tournament he has without Rakitic, right? There was a lot about that team that just worked perfectly for Modric. Eden Hazard took games over. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many times he just took the game over. And he demonstrated that killer instinct that everyone knows he has, but in a weird way, there's this like timidity and the shyness about him sometimes where he just kind of like passes the responsibility off to someone else. Now, there's a difference between Messi does this a lot of lending the ball, right? And understanding that now's not the time, this isn't the space, let me lend it, let me just kind of float. And then get it back where I know now's the time to do what I can do and show how special I am. So there's some of that, but other times I just think he passes when he should be the one finishing a chance off. And more often than not recently, he's starting to show he's got that in him.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing for him, why he doesn't get thrown into these other as one of the top players in Europe more frequently, is because the goal rate isn't there for him. He just doesn't score 20, 30 goals a season like these other guys do. I mean, the most he scored in one league one league season is 16 in 36 appearances in 2016-17.
And when you compare that to Mo Salah, where they're essentially playing the same role, right? Salah off the right, him off the left. In different systems, used in a different way, but still two players given a lot of freedom to be further up the field, inverted, and pick and choose when they want to be wide, when they want to be narrow. I mean, with Salah's production, and there not being a lot between them, skill, speed, and composure-wise, it really highlights that Eden Hazard should be scoring more.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just the inconsistency, I think, with him. You know, he's had some bad seasons, too. The season after they won the title, and he scored 4 goals in that season, the 2015-16 season. You always expect more from him, I think. And, you know, even though you mentioned the World Cup, he only scored 3 goals. And again, not to pick on Tunisia, 2 of them came against Tunisia, and 1 was in the third place game against England, which everybody kind of looks as an exhibition match. So, again, it's just you want to see him kind of take over these moments and these big tournaments and things like that. And I think the difference now with Sarri, though, compared to Conte and Mourinho, is he has a manager that wants to play attacking football
for the first time. Yeah, that fits exactly what he wants to do.
So that's why it wouldn't be that surprising. He's got 5 goals already, I think, after this hat trick. It wouldn't be that surprising if all of a sudden we see a 25-30 goal season out of him, because I think he's got the system around him that can help support him to do that.
And he may have to do it because you know, Morata hasn't yet been able to demonstrate that he's going to be the big production guy that Sarri enjoyed at Napoli, that he needs in this system. So the scoring may fall to Eden Hazard this season for him to have to pick that up. And I think at some point we'll see him used in that central role. I mean, you know, Sarri, I mean, he shows that if you're not going to produce and you're not going to benefit from the style he's playing, which is be vertical through the lines quickly to his attacking players, I mean, he's gonna sit you. He's gonna take you out. Yeah. And I think Pedro, Willian, and Hazard have demonstrated all in these wide positions that they can score and that they can contribute. So at some point, he may go away from Morata, and you know, Giroud. It's just I don't know if one of the two of those don't step up here quickly, he could move to that.
Well, it's interesting. Hazard had a quote after the game saying he loves playing with Giroud because he thinks he's one of the best hold-up players in the world. And Giroud didn't score any goals in the World Cup either, but he played almost every game and was a huge part of them winning despite not scoring. So, I just wonder if he might continue to lean on Giroud and say, hey, if you only score 5 goals this season, that's not the end of the world for us.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, that going back to that lend the ball thing, I mean, Giroud more than Morata. Morata actually has decent pace and likes to get in behind and is a selfish striker in the good sense of the term. So you can see why Eden Hazard likes Giroud, because Giroud is essentially making himself available to try to put Eden Hazard back in a good position.
Well, if Sarri is calling him the best player in Europe or one of the best, would it make sense for him to try and play him through the middle though? Because that you're not going to get the best out of Hazard that way, right? You want to find a way to keep playing him out on the left where he's at his best.
Yeah, I guess it's just like at some point, does he think Pedro's performing, Willian's performing, Hazard's performing. How do I get all these guys on the field at the same time? And if my striker's not scoring regularly, I just think it's a possible solution. I mean, listen, Messi was used that way with Barcelona for a stretch, and ultimately it was not where he was most effective. And, you know, he ended up back in a wide position where he could float and pick and choose his moments to get central. So, yeah, I mean, the hope is, and listen, Chelsea's one of the teams I think I've been wrong about so far, where I thought this project was going to take a lot longer. And I was a bit worried with early signs that there was going to be, and listen, Sarri said it as well. It was kind of the same thing he said at Napoli. He told the owners, I'm going to lose the first 7 games, and, you know, kind of as a joke. And actually, I think he ended up losing like the first 6 or something. So he warned everyone it was going to be a slow burn again, but I just think they're a lot further along than most people expected at this point.
Have they been tested, though, truly yet? I mean, they played Huddersfield. Arsenal was really their main tough match so far, and then they played Newcastle, Bournemouth, and Cardiff this past weekend.
The answer is no, but, like, you know, I think you can tell in games like that if if they're close, if they're close to figuring stuff out.
The last thing I was just going to ask about Hazard is if he has a breakout season or a season where he scores a lot more goals than he has in the past, does that make his chances of staying at Chelsea higher, or does that just mean even more that Real Madrid's going to probably try and grab him? I mean, he's 27 now. He'd be 28 in the next summer transfer window. Is he better off just staying at Chelsea, become a Chelsea legend, similar to someone like Drogba or someone like that, you know?
I mean, no, because I could see the argument for that, but mm-hmm. just the modern game isn't like that. I mean, it's so transient now. I mean, players don't stay at clubs long. And as good as Chelsea are, as successful as they've been, and as much as he might be enjoying playing there, and as wonderful as the idea of, although that's kind of becoming a question mark, if Abramovich is going to continue to fund this project and build the new stadium and all that, when Real Madrid come, you know, it's just the one club, I think, even above Barcelona for most players. Like, when Real Madrid comes and you think to yourself, this might be my only chance to play for that club, that super club, it's kind of, for a guy like Eden Hazard, something you got to push for. And I think he will. This summer, if Real Madrid come or if Barcelona come, I think those are the only two clubs that could really disrupt things and pry him out of there. I mean, I kind of nailed it with the whistles this week.
Yeah.
I mean, this might have been.
I'm the only reason you went over that first time. I pushed you.
I would have had the trifecta. but it's good to be back, seeing some Champions League action. We're watching the wrap up show. Some former teammates of mine, Timmy Howard, sitting next to Oguchi Onyewu, who announced his retirement mm-hmm. from professional soccer. What a great career he had. Loved playing at the youth national team level with him. Had some battles, UVA against Clemson. Really great dude, and I'm so psyched to see him finding his next path and enjoying TV with those guys.
Just real quick, where does he rank in terms of center backs in American history?
I mean, I think what pops in my head is probably in the top five. You know, I mean, you're thinking Eddie Pope. You're mm-hmm. thinking... I mean, maybe he's even higher than that. I mean, I'm thinking Eddie Pope. I'm thinking
Agus in there, I guess.
I mean, I think he's higher than Agus. Yeah. I do. I think Eddie Pope and Carlos Bocanegra.
Bocanegra gets in there, yep.
And you know, Dooley and I mean he's kind of that Berhalter. It's like that Berhalter Oguchi Onyewu. I mean, that's the debate right there. Yeah. So he's definitely up there, man. I mean, he was a presence, a total presence. My favorite, you know, the gif of him just
staring at Borghetti.
Yeah, Borghetti. Yeah.
They had him talk about it the other day. It was pretty cool.
And you know what? He's like the nicest guy ever. Yeah. So it's always the case, right? It's the guy that looks like he could just destroy you. Who's always the sweetheart off the field. But I'm just, you know, it's always like I've been out of the game now. Had to retire early because of injury. So I've been gone forever. But it's weird to see these guys mm-hmm. that were, you know, he was on my youth national team that you're just getting out of the game. Yeah. But it's fun to watch that. I mean, just a bunch of friends, you know, seeing Stewie and Nash and Timmy and Aguchi enjoying that. I mean, Gooch, that's kind of a nice little boys club over there that they're having blasts, and Kid Abdo's keeping them under control.
Keep trying to keep them under control.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned real quick, it just reminded me, because you've talked about Ortega being, I think, your AIM screen name. Is that correct?
Yeah. AIM was Ortega 10.
You mentioned Eddie Pope. He was my AIM screen name.
No way.
Pope JB23, I think, was my screen name for the first one. So,
good.
I used to play right back when he was playing right back for the national team in DC United.
Well, let's do a fun thing in the reviews this week. So add the stadium that you want to go see a game in, and include your really embarrassing AOL Instant Messenger screen name, and stay on your feet.